launching a product isn't the product's ready. It goes much further than that. There's a lot of planning that goes into it. And if you're in a fairly good sized business and you have, you know, let's say dozens or even hundreds of salespeople, and you know, your $100 million, $200 million business or bigger, it takes a lot of heavy lifting to introduce a new product into your own company, let alone into a market. And if you're launching a brand new product into a market you've never served, you have more risk than you can possibly imagine.
Oh, such a good question.
Well, when you come up with these questions, that's another great branding question.
That's a deep question.
That's a very interesting question because it really makes you think about what you just did.
Welcome to the Your Living Brand Live Show. This show is all about how you communicate your value, how you build influence through trust, and recognizing who your audience is and who they are not. Through our weekly conversations with our guests, we will explore different ways to enable you to demonstrate your uniqueness while we ask them, what's your story? And now, welcome our host, Ben Baker.
And welcome back to the Your Living Brand Live Show. Welcome, everybody. It's Ben Baker, and thank you guys for joining me one more week. I love the fact that you guys come back every single week. You guys call in, you listen in, you send me notes, you know, you subscribe, you share. Thank you guys for everything you do. You're an amazing audience, and I hope that we never disappoint. This week, I've got Dave Daniels coming to you from BrainCraft. Now, we're going to talk about launching a product. We're going to talk about what does it take to actually launch something. And I'm going to bring Dave in because Dave is an expert at this. So Dave, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Ben. And thanks for having me. And, you know, we've been getting to know each other and becoming friends and sharing all kinds of tips and ideas. And I really love what you're doing with the podcast thing. And it's a perfect fit internally for planning and executing a product launch. So maybe we can weave that into our conversation today.
Absolutely. I'd love to weave that into the conversation. But before we start, let's get everybody caught up. Give us a brief history of Dave. Like, where did you come from? What got you into being the launch guy? Because it's a very specific part of any company. And, you know, the fact that this is what you do, this is what you specialize in. So what got you here?
Well, you know, first of all, I was born at a very early age. So I always say that's a total dad joke. But no, early on in my career, I was actually a software developer. My education is in computer science and mathematics. And I kind of meandered my way through the software business. I was a developer and I managed development teams. And I jumped into the world of being a sales engineer. For those unfamiliar with that, that's the technical guru, if you will, on the sales team that the sales guy points to and says, I don't know, Dave, what do you think? So that was my job.
I've been part of that conversation, Dave.
Yeah. We can do that, right, Dave? Yeah.
Dave's
I don't
like, no,
see why not. No. No, you have to say, I don't see why not. You can't say yes or no. So you got to say, I don't see why not. And then I meandered through gigs as product management and product marketing and worked my way up into the executive ranks and got to run a few companies. And then I started a small company. I had an opportunity, so I took advantage of it. And I created this business called Launch Clinic. The name alone should be a hint, right? So it was about how to launch products and a little with coaching and training and so forth. And it got acquired by a company that maybe some of the listeners are familiar with, which is Pragmatic Marketing. And that was about 10, 12 years ago. And they acquired my little business and I came over to Pragmatic. And then I spent the next decade or so filling out all things launch. So a new launch class for Pragmatic with that I maintained, a lot of blogging around launch and also product marketing. But, you know, at last year, I decided it was time to do my own thing again. And so I started BrainCraft. And I said, you know, I'm going to take the experience of working with literally thousands of product professionals over a decade, and I'm going to redo it. I'm going to do it the way that I would do it with all of this knowledge that I built up through the years. And that became BrainCraft, and that evolved into the BrainCraft product launch framework and product launch course and coaching and a growing cadre of partners who seem to like what I do, and they want to use it as well. And so that's the maybe a little longer than you wanted version, but you can edit out all the other stuff.
No, actually, that you know what? That gives us a really good history, because it's really important to understand where people were before they understand where they are. So my question to you is, and before we get into the nitty-gritty and all of that, what's the number one thing you see that people do wrong when they launch a product or a service?
The number one thing they, well, gosh, can I have a list of like a half a dozen number ones?
You know what? Pick your top four or five. How about that?
My top number one, let's start with number one, is it astounds me that companies spend millions of dollars building a product and give launching it merely a second thought. Right. They'll work and work and work to build the product. They'll test it. They'll churn through it. They'll work with the engineering team and they'll rush to get the product done. They're all excited about it. And then they'll just say, OK, it's ready. And then they'll just throw it over the wall to marketing and sales and expect magic to happen. I think that's not, by the way, that is true for not only startups who maybe are a little bit immature yet in their processes, but very, very big companies that you are familiar with and that you admire. You know, blue chip companies do this every year. And so that's one of my big ones. The other one, if I could add this one, is almost everything we do in a business is based on an objective, a goal. We're trying to accomplish something. So to your listeners and our audience today, how many of you who have launched a product or are planning to launch a product actually could go to a whiteboard right now and write down, these are our launch objectives. This is what a successful launch looks like to us. And we have that socialized internally, and our stakeholders agree with what those are. And everything we do from this point forward will be a look back onto those objectives. Right? We do it in our life. Few companies do that at launch when they launch a product.
And you know, this resonates with me so much. In 2018, I wrote my first book, Powerful Personal Brands. And, you know, I spent months and months and months writing it and then editing it and then, you know, agonizing over the cover and the, you know, the font size and all the details to make sure this was right. And it wasn't until we were about 3 weeks from launch that I actually sat there and say, okay, what am I going to do about marketing this thing? And, you know, and this is somebody who's been marketing for companies for 25 years. But when we get the stuff for ourselves, when we get so focused on the minutiae, we get so focused on, we got to get this thing to the starting line, that we forget that that's just the starting line. All that is getting it up and, you know, turning the engine over and making sure that it's actually ready to run, but you're not giving it any gas to get to that first mile.
Or know where you're driving to.
Or have a clue where to go, or even have a steering wheel on the thing. You know, so it astounds me. And I took this to myself, you know, 6 months later going, you really didn't launch this thing well. For a guy who markets all the time for other companies and communicates and, you know, and is all about going, okay, where are you going? What's your goals? What are your objectives? How are we going to get you there? You know, I blew it. I'll readily admit that I blew the launch of my first book. And I think it was my naivete of not knowing what I was doing, being, you know, totally outside of my element in terms of creating the book itself, that I got so focused on the minutiae that I forgot, okay, it's nice that you have this thing. You know, how are you going to market? How are you going to get people excited about it? How are you going to let the world know that they need this and that it's here? So, you know, how do you help companies with that?
Well, the framework, the BrainCraft product launch framework, is really what I tell folks is kind of like guardrails. It gives you a structure that you can follow that helps you to understand that launching a product isn't the product's ready. It goes much further than that. There's a lot of planning that goes into it. And if you're in a fairly good sized business and you have, you know, let's say dozens or even hundreds of salespeople, and you know, your $100 million, $200 million business or bigger, it takes a lot of heavy lifting to introduce a new product into your own company, let alone into a market. And if you're launching a brand new product into a market you've never served, you have more risk than you can possibly imagine. I don't care how good the product is. And maybe it's great and people want it, but a lot of products fail because companies rush into a market thinking, I built it and they will come, and they don't come, right? You know, this isn't Kevin Costner in the Field of Dreams, right? And those customers are not going to be coming out of the cornfields, you know, to play ball. It takes work. And, you know, think about your salespeople. You know, I have maybe a pretty odd career path than a lot of people who wound up in marketing. It's because I spent a good bit of time in sales as a sales engineer. I have a great appreciation and a deep understanding of how hard it is to be a sales rep. You know, if you got a good product and it's selling like hotcakes, no one cares. But that's not how most salespeople have to deal. They have to really earn that commission. And because of that, I have deep empathy for what it takes to convince a sales team that this product should be part of their calculus for hitting their numbers. Because let's say as a product manager or product marketing manager, might have a number that I'm trying to hit with the product, whether it's a top line or a margin number. And I can't go out and sell it myself. I've got a sales force or a partner channel I got to use. And if they don't agree that this is a good thing for them, it doesn't matter how good a product it is. It really doesn't. So I think to that extent, the preparation of getting your organization ready. And there's really three aspects to that preparation. It's not just the company, and that's big enough as it is, but it's also your partners and it's also the market, right? What are you doing to prepare the market? You know, the auto companies do a really good job of them, at least most of them do. They do a good job of softening up the market, right? They leak the spy shots of the new cars coming out. People start creating a little buzz around, ooh, what's Tesla doing? Or, ooh, what's GM doing with their new battery-powered cars? And before you know it, there's enough buzz going on that people are interested in what's happening, and they get vested in it. And by the time the product's ready, then they're ready to go out and buy one, right? They've reached that level of excitement. Most companies don't do a good job of that. But you know what? If you had to invest billions of dollars into a factory and another billion to design it and get to the first prototype, you better believe you want to make sure the market's ready for your product.
Well, not only that, but you also have to have a budget put aside for that marketing and sales team to go out there and create that excitement. And, you know, it's interesting. You talked about a bunch of things. You talked about having a vested sales force. You know, I've been on the sales side. I've been on the marketing side. And we've all sat there and gotten stuff thrown at us from a marketing department that never talked to the sales department, never actually went out and talked to a customer, never, you know, just created stuff in a vacuum and give it to salespeople and say, okay, go out and sell this. And the salespeople just roll their eyes and say, how? Like, this doesn't mean anything. It has absolutely no bearing on reality. You know, how am I supposed to go out there? So if the sales team isn't vested in this, if they don't understand how they're going to sell this, why this is good not only for the customer, but good for them, and how they're going to make their commissions and how they're going to be successful, they're going to let it die on the grapevine. You know, and they're going to sit there and concentrate on the tried and true product that is already out there, the customers are already buying, the people already want, and they're not going to really introduce the new stuff because they're not sure whether it's going to be around in 6 months or not.
It's too much of a risk for them. So for those of you who are listening and don't understand this, I'll lay it out really simple for you. Your salespeople have to hit a quota. Their job is to bring money into the company. If they are not bringing money into the company, they're of no use to the company, and they get an opportunity to try their skills somewhere else. And it's very simple. Every sales rep knows this. For the most part, most companies pay their sales reps with a base salary and then a variable commission, right, based on their performance. The rest of the company, you don't have to worry about that. So if the product doesn't sell well or that, it's no big deal. They don't let you go. They just say, oh, well, maybe the next version or the next, you know, the next round will be better. And that brings me to something that you do extremely well that I think would add a tremendous amount of value to companies that are launching big products, right? They could be game-changing products, fulfillment of the strategy, entering into new markets. And that is, use an internal podcast for your sales enablement activities. All right. So here's where I'm going with this. You know, days past, I would use webinars, right? I would try to get my salespeople together. I would visit offices. I would do all the things that maybe a lot of people listening here do. And I would be frustrated because people wouldn't get on the webinars. And, you know, we didn't really record them because the quality wasn't that good at the time anyway. And, you know, we had to figure out where to stick it so they could get to it. And there was no good way to do that. We have all of that today. And rather than doing a webinar, do it as a podcast. You know, think of the power that you could have in short little snippets of 15 to 20 minutes, maybe even 30 minutes if it's compelling. Talking up the launch. What's the status? What are we going to be doing next? What do we need to, you know, educating your sales team on the markets you're going after and why you're going after, and maybe have interviews of representative buyers on the podcast so they could get an idea of what it's like. And maybe you have some early adopter customers and, you know, bring them on and talk to them and interview them, and maybe some early wins that some of the sales team are getting and talk about what they went through and the trials and tribulations to close the deal, right? And all of that builds energy and excitement and knowledge. And all you have to do is, you know, put them internally. You're the expert. You mentioned earlier, what, store them on SoundCloud and make a private channel?
Yeah, you just store them on SoundCloud or something like that, or you pick some type of hosting system and you just make it internal. You just make it behind a closed door, through behind a password protected or whatever. And that way people, the nice thing about a podcast is people can listen to it on their drive. They can listen to it when they start flying again, in the hotel, at home, on a walk, whatever. It's asynchronous. You know, that's the one thing about webinars, is that you sit there and say, okay, I've got 8,000 salespeople. I want to get them all on the webinar at the same time because we all want to hear it all at the same time. You're never going to get all 8,000. It's impossible. And even if they do, how many of them have turned off their microphones, turned off their video, and they're going there and doing sales calls at the same time that they're supposed to be listening to your material, because they know that they have to be on this webinar at X hour and X time, and that's totally inconvenient for them. But you know what? Their avatar shows up, so obviously they're there and they're listening. They're there and they're listening.
You know, and you know what? That's it. It's, you know, for a lot of salespeople, their schedules are a little crazy, particularly if they travel or when they did travel. And as a result of that, you know, when they're on a flight, maybe they could listen to a couple of podcasts. When they're, you know, on the bus heading over to the car rental place, they could listen to a podcast. It's more convenient for them. And that's what makes it work so well, right? A hard schedule on a date and a time. And hey, I've got salespeople in Germany. I've got salespeople in the Netherlands. I've got salespeople in Singapore. I can't get them on the call at the same time.
It's impossible. It is impossible.
It's impossible.
Well, and not just your salespeople, your customer experience team, your customer service team, your ops team. There's all sorts of different teams that are part of a launch. And it behooves you to get everybody on the same page weeks, if not months, before the launch to let people know what's coming up. What are the challenges that you're facing? What do you need to overcome? What are the things that you need from different departments? What do you need from different offices? You know, how do we bring all this stuff together? What needs to happen in terms of promotional marketing materials? What happens do in terms of printing materials? You know, what's new and innovative that you guys are going to use and able to get this in front of the customers? There's so many different things that are part of a launch that it's not just the sales team. It's not just the marketing team. You know, it's the product development team. It's the, you know, the operations teams that are actually going to build this thing, customer experience teams, whatever. Everybody needs to know what's going on.
That's right. Yeah. And the way you described that articulates very clearly what I'm trying to get to is that there are a lot of moving parts, and those moving parts have to move as a machine, right? All of those gears interlock. And if you get one cog in the machine, the whole machine fails, right? You got to make sure that finance has what they need, that legal has what they need, that compliance has what they need, that sales has what they need, and sales op. I could go on and on a laundry list. And now if you get into regulated businesses and manufacturing and things like medical devices, the complexities grow, but that's normal in their world. But it's still complex. And even, I got to say, one thing you asked me about earlier, what are some of my top things? And I gave you two. I'm going to give you one more because your discussion sparked it in my mind. One concept I talk about in the BrainCraft Product Launch Framework is advantages and obstacles. And they're in there for a very specific reason. One is that most organizations inflate their advantages and they overlook or discount the obstacles. You'll hear things like, oh, that's a great problem to have. Oh, yeah, it's a great problem to have until your customers are angry with you because you can't deliver products and they want a refund. Now tell me about the problem. Yeah. It's really understanding what are you good at? What is your expertise? What would people value about the product and your organization? So that puts you into the advantages column. But what are some of the obstacles, right? Do you have access to these customers? Have you sold to them before? Do you know them well enough to empathize with them about the problem you solve for them? Can you deliver products to them? Right? Can you support them? Do you have the authority to conduct business with them? Do they view you as being authoritative enough that they'll allow you to play in their sandbox with them? Right. So those are all examples of obstacles that are often overlooked. Like, just get this thing out the door. Let's get it in the hands of sales. They can sell anything to anybody. They're amazing, except when they have to call on a buyer they've never called on and talk about a problem they're unfamiliar with, and they don't know how those companies buy something and what's their process and what they care about, what motivates them to buy, what's their buying process look like, and what's their buying criteria? What are their hot buttons? What do they care about? Because what you're talking about that you think is cool, they may not care at all about. One market segment might say, oh, that's really awesome. Another market say, whatever.
It's funny when you say that. 25, 30 years ago, I worked for Xerox. And when I first talked to Xerox training, they talked about, you know, customer needs. But what they really talked about was speeds and feeds. You know, it was all about features and benefits. But it was assumed benefits, not the benefit to that actual particular customer understanding what their business is, what their problems truly are, and how you could actually fix a problem that's causing them grief in a way that's not going to break their bank.
Because Xerox was a very engineering-oriented business at the time, and they were very successful, but they would reverse engineer the benefits from the features in the product, right? They would create benefits that didn't exist in the minds of the buyers.
Yeah, I mean, I remember we had one customer that had a problem where they were always, you know, said they're going, our paper tolerances need to be better because we need to be able to, you know, our machines are always jamming on us. We're buying these $35,000 photocopiers because that's what we can afford, but they're always jamming on us. Well, one of the guys I know said, okay, went up to his tech, told the tech in the demo to open the tolerances right up to some unrealistic, you know, thing that will, you'll never see it in real world situation. The guy sat there, tore 15 or 20 pieces of paper, put them in the auto feeder, hit the, and they all worked perfectly. But they work perfectly in ideal situations. They'll never work in life, but he sold them the photocopier. And that doesn't work today. That will never work today. That, you know, we need to train our salespeople on how to listen better, you know, how to be more empathetic, how to sit there and be better problem solvers, how to be better traders. And they can only do that when they understand what's really happening. What does this product do? And what does it not do? You know, what are the shortcomings? And we as companies are so willing to overlook the shortcomings of our product instead of saying, you know what, this product is great at doing this, but you know what, if you do this, no, our product probably is not the best thing for you.
Right. Not a good fit. Thank you so much for your time.
Exactly. And I think that there's too many companies out there that have the attitude, if somebody's got a Visa card and a heartbeat, they're a customer. And we need to get beyond that.
One sales VP I used to work for said, I'll hold the pen, you move the, or no, wait, you hold the pen, I'll move the paper, right? Sign this, the contract. Yeah, I'm okay. You're breathing, right? Yeah, you're a prospect. So you can fog a mirror. We can make this work. But yeah, those days are very much long gone. They are, buyers have access to way too much information. You know, which is wonderful for us as buyers, right? It's easy to figure out if the product is for crap or not, because you do a couple searches, you can figure that out real quick. So it's hard to hide those things. That's the, I think, the real message here. You can't hide a product that has poor performance or poor quality or, you know, insufficient capability.
Hi, everyone. Do you want to be your best customer's vendor of choice? Do you want to cement relationships with them, add real value, and gain insights that your competitors just can't get? Go to podcasthostforhire.com. That's podcasthostforhire.com. And let's work together to make you the value vendor of choice. So, do you find that enough companies have cross development teams, i.e. they go out there and they actually bring the team together, somebody from customer service, somebody from sales, somebody from marketing, somebody from ops, somebody from project management, together early on in the process and through the process to make sure that the different departments are being recognized and listened to as the product is actually being developed? Or do you find that that's just a fantasy that should happen?
It's one of those things that if you ask people, they'll go, yeah, I probably should have done that, but I didn't have enough time. I like to tell our customers that a product launch, particularly one that's a new product in a new market, is likely to be the most cross-functional activity your company will ever undertake. And you should cast a very wide net because virtually everybody's going to be affected in some way. The obvious ones are marketing and sales, but don't forget legal and finance. And what about all the other teams? You know, marketing, channel marketing, sales ops, customer success teams, customer support. The net has to be cast pretty wide. You know, you don't want a cast of thousands, right? You don't want a process by committee but you certainly want to have what I like to call an inner and an outer circle on that team. So that inner circle are the ones that are absolutely critical to the success of the product launch. Without them, the launch is going to be a failure. And then you have concentric circles around that. There are people that you need on a regular basis outside that ring. And then there are people on one more ring outside of that, that I like to think of as like my SMEs, right? My subject matter experts. They're not a part of the regular team, but I need to pull Ben in because he has a particular level of skill around a certain important thing to us. So we need his insight, but he's not there for the regular meetings. And we have the concept of a launch director, you know, somebody who's driving the bus and somebody who has to make the hard decisions. And unfortunately, in most companies, that's not a full-time position because they don't launch products very frequently. Now, in tech, we tend to do that a lot. But in other businesses, like, you know, building supply and, you know, that kind of thing, I mean, that you might launch a product every couple of years. So you're not going to hire somebody to sit in the corner and say, hey, okay, Ben, you are our launch director. It's your full-time position. Great. What products are we going to launch? Well, we don't have anything in the queue right now. Perhaps in a year or two, we'll have something for you. You know, so they lose that muscle memory. They don't know how to do it. Conceptually, they do, right? And so they look at, well, how does Apple do it? Let's just do it like Apple does it, or pick a company, you know, Tesla, whatever. Whoever is getting a lot of attention, then that's who they'll turn to. And they'll go, you know what? We need to launch just like them, but they have no idea how to do it.
But they don't see the inner workings.
They don't see the sausage making going on.
Exactly. You know? They have no idea who's behind the curtain pulling the levers.
And it's big and complex. It is.
And that's where I can see somebody like you adding a lot of value, because you've been down this road 100, if not hundreds of times. And instead of being that person on staff, you're right. Somebody sitting at a desk in an office somewhere with your feet up, smoking a cigar, and say, yeah, come get me when you need me. You know,
yeah,
you
can be reading.
I'll be reading.
I'll be listening to podcasts.
You're somebody that people can just bring in on an as-needed basis who can ramp up really quickly with that process already, you know, in mind and on paper, that can be augmented to make sense for that actual product or service or whatever that they're doing based on the timeline. But how do people even find out that somebody like you exists, you know, when, you know, early enough in the process? Because let's face it, not enough people spend enough time, you know, early on strategically figuring out what their launch is. By the time they figure out they need to launch, they're probably, you know, 6 months into a process that they should have already been there. So how do you get them to understand that this is something that has to happen on day one?
You can't. It's like anybody who has a problem that doesn't believe they have a problem, right? They have to experience the problem before they can reach that point. So our best customers come from really two camps. One camp is a senior executive gets hired into a, you know, a growing but immature company and looks around and goes, oh man, we got to put some process around this because this is going to be a train wreck, because they've been there. They experienced it. And then the other one is an owner or CEO of a company that says, you know, this is not working for me. This is a problem. We need to fix this. It's evident to me that the team I have is perfectly competent in what they do. But when it comes to launching a product, we need somebody who can guide us into, you know, developing a process that works for us, and that we can document and we can follow and we can improve over time. But, you know, I've stopped trying to convince somebody. When I see a train wreck and they don't see the train wreck, there's no point trying to convince them that there's going to be a train wreck. They have to experience it. I think that's true of everything in life, right? Our little kids, don't touch that candle. You're going to burn your fingers. We teach them hot, 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 right? But what do? They go up and they go, psst, and then they go, wow, yeah, because their fingers are burned. I'm like, yeah, okay, sorry you had to learn that way, but that's just the way it is in life.
Yeah. And I think that as the economy has changed, it makes far more sense for organizations to be looking outside of their organization for experts.
Yeah. And I think they're more comfortable with that now. We're almost a year into, working remotely and figuring out how to collaborate. And, a lot of businesses can't do this, right? If I got a factory and I've got machines, I need humans there. But, we're more comfortable with, doing like we're doing right now. It's a Zoom session. We see each other. We're comfortable with it. Our cat walks across the desk. A dog barks in the background. Kids are hungry, right? So it's one of those things that we've grown to accept as okay. And I don't have to be thinking about, Dave has to get on an airplane and fly to YVR, to Vancouver for a one-day meeting and then fly home, which is cross-country for me. I mean, cross-continent for me. And then we can just get on the phone and we can get on Zoom and, magically we're talking to each other and we can share experiences and ideas and I can do a little exploration. And here's what I tell prospective clients. I keep it simple, right? Super simple. First meeting's free. If you genuinely have a problem and you just want to talk through it with somebody who can give you some advice and counsel, by all means, just schedule some time with me and I'll hop on a call with you for an hour. And after an hour, if I don't feel like I can add any value, like my features aren't a match for your problem, if you will, I'll just say, I'm not your guy. So, and if you're uncomfortable with it, you can say, yep. I don't think it's a good fit and we can move on. I'm happy with that.
That's awesome. Listen, Dave, we could sit here and talk for an hour, but I got to let you go. But before I know we could talk off air. I promise. But I have to ask you one last question before I let you go. Cause it's one I ask everybody. When you leave a meeting and you get in your car and you drive away or you turn off the Zoom camera, or whatever we're going to do these days, what's the one thing you want people to think about you when you're not in the room?
That the one thing I want them to think about is that's a guy I can count on. No matter what, that's a guy I can count on.
And I think that that's really important today because if you're going to be the one helping them get from zero to success, they need to know they can count on you. And I know that people can. So, Dave, you have been an absolutely wonderful guest. Thank you for all the gold.
I am just so happy to be here. You give me an opportunity to chat and talk about things that I care about. And hopefully it'll have some impact onto some of your listeners. But I'm deeply thankful for your invite. And maybe we can do it again sometime.
Absolutely. Take care and I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thank you.
This has been the YourLivingBrand.live show. I want to thank you for tuning in today. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to the show at YourLivingBrand.live and share your favorite episodes with colleagues and friends. At Your Brand Marketing, we help companies engage, retain, and grow their most valuable assets, their employees. If you're tired of losing great staff and want to retain your best employees, build brand champions and leaders at any level. Contact us for a 30-minute consultation at yourbrandmarketing.com. That's www.yourbrandmarketing.com. Thank you again for listening and sharing. Tune in next week when we ask another guest, what's your story?